We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
I was thinking more about the challenge of implementing the whole idea. And it's like, you guys should, and maybe you come up with this kind of stuff, but it's like, you should be, maybe like try and somehow get into like communication with science teachers. I feel like, you know, whether it's astronomy departments at universities or even just high school science departments, you know, where they can build one of these things and stick it up on the roof. I feel like that's something you could sell to them as some kind of project, a learning opportunity, blah, blah, blah.
So and that's a great point. This is a really good STEM project. So, you know, it gives you the opportunity to actually assemble an enclosure, put together sensors on a small embedded board, and actually put together something that it's actually taking, you know, environmental readings, and you can understand kind of how observational science works. So as far as a STEM project for kids, it's actually a really great project. And it's fun because you get to watch great videos and kind of see the fruits of your labor.
Yeah, it would be, you know, if I was in high school still or whatever, I'd be all about like building a UFO detector. See, that would be like, you get kids engaged that way. That would be cool. You know, and then they're part of the network and they can see what comes up. So, yeah. I don't know how you'd go about like reaching. See, then that raises an issue too of and this is the plague of all UFO research, where it's like you don't have the wherewithal, the means right now to like send out 10,000 pamphlets to every science department. not like many of them will be even in the schools in a few weeks anyway. But you know, there's a financial challenge to all this. So you have a Patreon or something like that?
We do have a Patreon. But yeah, come jump into our Patreon.
Patreon/SkyHub. Patreon.com/SkyHub.
Yep. Have you received any funding from I think I joked with Steve before the show, like I asked if Bob Bigelow was throwing him any money at me. He said no. But maybe, who knows? Bob Bigelow, if you're listening, maybe it's a good idea to, you got plenty of money to put towards UFOs. This would be a good project. But have you guys gotten any, you don't have to tell me like, oh, you know, Macy's stepped up and gave us $1 million, but like, do you have anyone like funding this in any way that's helping out?
So we do have, I think close to 20 Patreon supporters, and we've had great members of the community like Bob McGuire that have donated equipment and Patreon funds. So they've actually donated equipment for testing and evaluation. And but mostly it's community members that are supporting this. We don't have any big, rich millionaires or billionaires bankrolling our operation. So it's basically we're putting in our time and our money to make this a reality.
Yeah, we have experts from quite a few different fields. So, you know, really no matter what field you work in, there is something you can do to help the project.
Yeah, even if
people want
you know,
to, they go in and join the chat, right?
Jump in
what's
the chat,
source code?
There's a place
thing
in there for you to say. Oh, go ahead, Steve, source code guy.
Well, yeah, what's the source code? Is that like a forum?
So we actually host all of our source code on GitLab. A majority of our code is written in Golang and JavaScript. So we're using Vue.js and Golang for a majority of our platform. So if you're a Go developer, a JavaScript developer, come hit us up, and you can get started.
I didn't understand like any of those things you just said, but all right. So
the code is the
I know. I'm being facetious, but yeah, okay. The code. Yeah, I'm looking in here. So all this shit is like, if someone's into this stuff, they'd know what proto-tracker node is, and they'd that's all part of the system, and they can tweak it or suggest changes or help develop it further, right? Is that kind of the thing?
Yep, and come submit new code and add new features and even work on the hardware aspect. So, you know, even if you're a web developer or like doing promotion or advertising, come hit us up. We need help everywhere. So if you like writing newsletters, you can come be our newsletter guy or girl.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, there's plenty of opportunity. What do you we're not telling stories out of school here, so it's not like no one's better than anybody else, folks. But what do you I preface all that now because what do you guys make of you're not the only people to show up recently and start a company with riding the wave of this UFO renaissance, if you will, that's going on. I think there's that UAP Expeditions. I don't even know what they're doing. I don't know what they do. And there's another one. I don't know the name of it, but they profiled it in Vice along with you guys. So I guess
are you talking about Hypergiant?
That's who I'm talking about. There you go. So what do you make of this weird sort of gold that I don't want to call it a gold rush like people are, like I don't even know about the other groups. So but I don't want to call it a gold rush. I guess a gold rush for information, sure. So I guess what do you make of this gold rush for information that sort of sprung up where these groups all of a sudden have all kind of come along in the last couple of years?
Well, I think ours is the only one that's not proprietary. I'm pretty sure we're the only ones who are just totally open source and totally licensed to the public.
Yeah.
Yep. So
I don't know the other ones very well, and like I said, I don't want to really get too deep into this because you're not here to talk about their companies. But is it all sort of the same thing? Like, let's try and get good UFO evidence.
So,
well, Steve is putting together the. Go ahead, machine learning.
So, yeah, I'm not really sure the core goal. I know the UAPX guys are looking to go out and do research, right? So
yeah,
they're primarily a research outfit. And they want answers just like we do. I don't have much insight into Hypergiant. I've read some of the articles, but Hypergiant and Ben Lamb can definitely speak more intelligently about that. But I think really fundamentally what it comes down to is that the UFO videos released by the Navy are very compelling. And the things that we're getting out of the government, like the Senate Intelligence Committee, just – set up a UAP task force and reporting procedures for UAP sightings within the intelligence community. So we're kind of hitting a moment where the government's actually taking UFOs serious and the community's taking it serious. And there's real professionals and very driven people out there that want answers and real data. So
yeah.
I think you're just seeing the results of kind of the efforts of, you know, give some credit to Chris Mellon and TTSA and Lou Elizondo. A movement, and you're seeing the result of that. Like, there's a lot of momentum, and more people are getting involved and looking for real hard data.
Yeah, well, it seems that way. Like I said, it's a gold rush for information. People. There's certainly a lot of interest. And I think maybe it is kind of in response to sort of that maddening aspect I mentioned earlier where it's like, well, the government has all these means of tracking this shit, and they're not telling us what they get, so we're going to have to do it ourselves. And that's what you guys are trying to do, which is good, you know, because as a publisher of exciting UFO videos, I'm a fan of any place that's trying to get more better UFO videos. So I appreciate that. Based on what you've seen in these, because I guess in a sense, you guys are, well, you're far more qualified than me. We'll start with that. To look at these government videos that you're talking about, because you've seen a whole bunch of these SkyHub videos. So is what you're seeing in those government videos really that unique, I guess you could say? Because to me, it's like it's just a thing, you know. I mean, I've seen it a million times now, so I'm as just about everybody in the field. But you guys have seen a shitload of IR videos, so maybe you can speak to, yeah, this is extraordinary, or no, this is interesting, but, you know, we need better video or whatever. Well, we always need better video, but you know what I'm saying. So what's your take on the videos?
So my take personally, I think they're compelling, right? But I don't think they're conclusive. So I know with the videos that there's been rumors that there was radar data and other radio optical data that was available, but it's not public, right? So
right.
When you're looking at these kind of anomalous things, you really need a comprehensive data set, kind of like what SkyHub produces. But it's very unlikely that we'll ever see the radar data and radar returns from those videos. So to me, the video is not conclusive. I just think it's compelling evidence. I don't think we can conclude anything from it, but Adam might have a slightly different perspective.
Yeah, Adam's put a decade into this shit. He's probably a little...
he's definitely more versed.
What was the question again?
He's ready to believe. What do you make of these videos the government has in comparison to the many IR videos that you, as part of SkyHub, have studied? Because, as I said, you clearly have...
I think they're strange videos. I've heard people try to debunk them. I don't buy that they're seagulls. I don't buy that the rotation on the gimbal ship was an artifact of the camera gimballing. I think they're strange. And, you know, the fact that they're from the Navy gives me a little more assuredness that they are strange when the Navy said that they are unknowns.
So, that's another thing to consider. You literally have thousands of people in a naval battle group with intelligence professionals and radar operators that have looked at these videos, and no one knows what they are. And that means something.
Yeah, well, that's why they've caused so much excitement, right? Because the government's the government says they don't know what they are. So, now, this is sort of off the beaten path, but it sort of is covering the subject in general. One of the things that kind of drives me up the wall over the last couple of years is, and we saw it again like a couple of weeks ago with this New York Times article, is that every time this happens, that there's a new revelation in the story. It's happened like six or seven times now since that original New York Times article came out in December 2017. Because of the tumultuous nature of our present world, many people they don't care. They don't. This isn't resonating or it hits for a couple of days and then it goes away. I mean, we're living through a global pandemic, so it's kind of understandable that the idea of aliens coming to visit is like, that's a pretty cool fanciful escape for a couple of days, and then we got to get back to, you know, burying grandma. So I guess the whole overarching observational question here is, what do you make of this almost inability of to make a long-standing impact here? Like, people, because the thing I get frustrated about is the joke. Everyone makes the same fucking joke on Twitter every time, and they get like a million likes, and I'm like, I hate you, because they're like, oh, the government just said UFOs are real and no one cares, that's so 2020. And it's like, you said that 3 months ago. So it's like this cycle keeps repeating where you know, there's some kind of revelation and then people get kind of ginned up, and then it falls out of the attention span after a couple of days. So Adam, we'll start with you, since I've leaned on Steve so much, and you've been following the UFO phenomenon for, like I said, about 12 years or so. So what do you make of that?
What was the question again?
Oh, boy.
Say that one more time. I have a baby crying here while you're asking. I'm
all right.
Sorry.
You're going to have a 41-year-old man crying soon. You keep this up. What do you make every time there's a big revelation? I'm going to give you the short version. Every time there's a big revelation, people on social media and the media, they get excited for like a couple of days and then it goes away. And they all make the same joke that the government's telling everybody that UFOs are real. But who cares, because it's 2020. How 2020? Ha ha, murder hornets and everything else. So I guess what's your take on that? The fact that whatever's happening.
Yeah,
here with the
subject, I hear what you're asking.
We're not turning over. We're not crossing over into some new territory. It seems like we're just repeating the same thing over and over again.
I feel like you could see it that way, but I think we've gotten to a new position from where we've been before. So we have, you know, folks at the SCU, and Steve's a member of SCU, and he can tell you about who they are. But, I mean, it's a group of scientists that have moved beyond the question of whether these things are happening, and they're moving into the direction of figuring out how they move, what they might be made of, what the material science is. So while somebody from the outside, it may seem like it's just bouncing back and forth to are they real and who cares, you know, there's a whole level of new scientists that are taking it seriously, and that's who we hope to serve.
That makes sense. Yeah. All right, Steve, what do you think of that long-winded question of mine?
So it's interesting because, and specifically about the Times article and this constant trend of, oh, this amazing UFO thing was reported and the government said UFOs are real. I mean, the articles really don't say that, right?
Everybody's
kind of making these clickbaity headlines for news articles. They are reporting factual information, but people are kind of twisting and kind of trying to hype up some of the articles. So I think in some regard it gets kind of old, right? Because people read an article and they grab the title and they're like, oh man, the government just said we recovered crashed UFO spaceships. It's like, well, that's not what they said, but that's everything that everybody wants to talk about. And then everybody's walking around thinking like, okay, we recovered a crashed UFO, like ET showed up, crashed their car, and now we got it. But it kind of gets interesting. That's like, we live in an age where, you know, we put out a lot of false information all over the place and people don't really focus on what's actually true.
Right.
We get stuck in the echo chamber of information.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Especially on social media. Yeah, it's a very interesting I made this observation to somebody off the air in recent weeks, but really noticed it with this recent Times article too. It's you know, and I'm sure people, again, like, I don't think people in UFO world even pay attention to me anymore, so it's fine. But I think I am an observer. I'm not a part of the community. So this time around, I got sort of this distinct impression that there's like almost this kind of like disclosure fatigue. Like, people are tired, and I want to apologize. There's got to be a better way to say this, so I won't say it that way. People are tired of being teased. They're tired of this slow drip. There was somebody who wrote about the article, a mainstream writer, and they were like, just show us the aliens already. Like, this is getting – it's getting a little tedious. every time there's this little thing, it's like, okay, how much longer do you need to prime the pump? Like, you're going to show us the fucking aliens or not?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that we've gotten those three videos from the Navy, and we've gotten a statement from the Navy that says, yes, these are actually authentic naval videos, and these are unknowns. You know, we don't have to go back into the past anymore and thumb through sighting reports of incredible things doing, you know, amazing maneuvers. We've got a basement that we can start from where we say we definitely have some unknowns. Where do we go from here?
What do you think of that, Steve, what I was saying about the disclosure fatigue? I got what you're saying, Adam. Steve wanted to say something, I could tell.
Yeah, so I don't even know what disclosure actually means. So I actually – it is my opinion.
Well, it varies
the government,
person to person, so yeah.
Yeah, and in my opinion, the government probably doesn't have a lot to disclose. I think they are probably just as confused as we are. I think they probably have a better body of evidence to actually support that something truly strange is going on, but I don't think they have answers like people are expecting. I think they're aware that the UAP phenomenon is real. They just don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's kind of my inclination, too. And Rich Dolan sort of offered that up as a possibility, where he said, what if we, the other day on Twitter, where he said, you know, what if this is it? Like, what if that's it? They're like, here, we have these videos, we don't know what they are, and, you know, good luck. We'll be thinking we're going to have a report in a few months about more shit we know, you know, more shit we saw we can't explain. It's like, well, if we hit a wall on this, again, we're going to need a project like SkyHub to do the work to collect the information. So it'll be interesting.
Yep. I'm excited to see where the community leads us.
Yeah, as far as disclosure goes, I always kind of like, I guess in my mind, it's not like, oh, UFOs are real. It's like, to me, disclosure is like, I want to know what they are. That to me is like disclosure. And it's like the government may, like you kind of said, the government may not even be able to pull off the kind of disclosure that people like me want to see, you know. Saying UFOs are real is just, to me, it's like, yeah, of course fucking UFOs are real. Like, they're just they're unidentified flying objects. Some of them are normal shit, and some of them we don't know what they are. But the fact that they're like a question mark. It's like, of course they're real. But what they are is the real question. So I get kind of irritated when I see those articles, like we were talking about, the clickbaity headlines that are like, the government just said UFOs are real. It's like, so is the fucking wind. So are clouds. Like, you know, we need to know what they are. We need to know why they're in the fucking sky. We need to know what they're doing up there. And hopefully they're creatures, which, because I would like that, but... Yeah.
I think it's probably more likely that it's a lot of different things. I don't think it's going to be just one thing.
Right. That's kind of been a theory that I've floated out there. And, well, a lot of great people have. Brad Steiger used to have like a list of like 25 things that UFOs could be. And it's probably like all of the above. I've likened them to like clouds, you know. It's like there's all different kinds of clouds. They're all, but each one sort of has a different story to it, as far as like how it got formed and everything else. So it's probably more along those lines.
Yeah, we're excited to see what the data shows, for sure.
Now, would you be... What would you... I guess... I mean, I think you would continue onward no matter what, but let's say in the next year or two it comes out that they figure out what those things in the fantastic videos were. Let's say they're like, oh, it turns out these were Chinese spy drones, or these were American spy drones we couldn't tell you about until this new war we're at with China started and we started using them and busted them out. So I guess, like, what would your reaction be to that? Because I feel like I've tried to maintain a level of caution with a lot of this, because there is a part of me that I've seen the UFO community screwed over so many times that it's like, oh, shit, what if they're building up these UFOs maybe to pull the rug out from under us and be like, oh, turns out that UFOs are solved. We figured it out. Go away now. Stop with all this silly alien stuff. So I guess what would your reaction be if the government, if the videos were solved? And I don't mean like, and I like Mick West. He does great work. I don't mean like by a critic. I mean like the government came out and was like, yeah, we figured it out. And it's not alien.
Yeah, I think at that point we're, you know, first of all, that would be great to know what those particular videos showed. But there's like a whole multitude of different types of things people see. So we're going to have these cameras looking up, and we're going to have these sensors doing their thing. And, you know, basically it's like Steve said, it's an observational science platform. So we hope to be able to answer all kinds of questions when we get these things deployed.
Mm-hmm. And those questions don't necessarily have to be about UFOs or UAPs. I mean, there's researchers and academics all over the place that all they really want is data to study, right? So they want really good data. And data is always not cheap to get. So if we can help subsidize collecting observational data about lots of different things in the environment, and help academics and basically push science forward in lots of different areas. I think Sky Hub always has a place, even if they were to say that all UFOs are just Chinese drones.
There are some.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people interested in doing science on drone flight patterns and how many people are flying them and when they're flying them. We might wind up having the largest database of drones data in the world.
It's entirely possible. Yeah,
right.
I think yeah.
Absolutely.
The drone is like the double-edged sword of UFO world because it's such an easy. It's like the swamp gas thing. Like people can use it really easily to explain away like anything. Whether, because I don't know.
Oh, sure.
I it's good you guys have like a drone guy because it's like most people really don't know anything about drones. So it's like if someone's like, oh, that's a drone, and you'd be like, oh, okay. But it turns out, you know, maybe a drone can't fly that high, or maybe a drone can't do the things that this thing in the video did, or whatever. You know what I mean? So unless you're a drone expert, sometimes you can be fooled into just going, oh, okay, it's probably a drone. Forget about it. Now, I see – I'm looking at the box again. I see there's two things on the box. What are – I presume the round globe-looking thing is the sensor. That's the one that's picking up, let's say, the YouTube videos. What's the little thing next to it on the box?
So the big one you see on the top, that is actually a pan, tilt, and zoom camera, and that's that we're actually planning that for the next version. But the little flat camera you see with the dome on top, that's a fisheye camera that looks straight up and sees 180-degree view of the sky. The big camera that looks like it swivels around. So the plan is once your fisheye detects something moving in the sky, that pan, tilt, and zoom camera will actually track the object and follow it across the sky and zoom in on it so we can get a clear picture of it. So
nice.
In the next version, we'll start working on actually tracking objects across the sky with the pan, tilt, and zoom camera.
All right.
And this is
what
where
it,
we're
– our...
and we're hoping to get really great videos and pictures out of that camera because we'll be able to zoom in. You know, for instance, I have a camera that zooms 25x, but we'll be able to pick up cameras that can zoom about 40 to 60x. So we should get very good quality pictures out of that.
All right. So I want to see. I'm looking forward to seeing these pictures when they come out. Now I see. It's kind of a silly question, but so it says a worldwide public search for UAP. So you're kind of leaning into the the name change that a lot of people are as well. But you also use UFO, so it's not like you're not entirely averse to the UFO term, right?
Yeah, those are synonyms,
right?
As far as I know.
Yeah.
No, I know, but some people are like, oh, geez, you know how it is. Some people are like, oh, don't call them aliens or whatever. It's like, don't say UFO. It's silly. I like Flying Saucer. I'm an old-school Friedman fan, so, you know, I'd like to reclaim Flying Saucer. Now, Adam, been interested in this. What's that?
Oh, yeah, he was into the Flying Saucers. Friedman.
Absolutely, he was the man. Now, Adam, you've been in this for a long time. Have you, aside from the video there from the Sky Hub, but have you ever personally seen anything anomalous like that in your... You know, even if it was before you got into UFOs, like, have you ever had a UFO sighting?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's why I got into them. That was in 2008. I was out in trial in West Texas. We were in a federal trial. And after the first week of trial, me and one of the plaintiffs, his name's Joe, and the owner of the Big Bend Telephone Company, Mr. Haynes, we were all out having a dinner on a Saturday night with some friends of the plaintiff, and it came to find out that was a retired naval captain who built a house in the Davis Mountains. And so we're out at his house, and it's a beautiful view. We're out in the middle of nowhere. Basically, he chopped the top of one of these little tall hills off, and put his house on it. So we're sitting outside, and he hands us these night vision binoculars. And he says, hey, take a look up in the sky with these things. And those were the, I mean, Gen 4, you know, really nice ones. And I look up in the sky, and we see satellites doing their thing, just slowly trekking across the sky. And then one of these satellites just stopped, and it went back the other direction. And I looked at the other guys, and I said, can you all see that? And, of course, they can't see it. They don't have the binoculars. So I looked back up. And this thing shoots left, right, up, down, side, 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 ding, 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 boom, and it just flies off. And I'm thinking that had to have just covered 5,000 miles in a half a second. And I tell the guys out there with me, and they don't believe it, obviously, but they take the binoculars, and then sure enough, Joe Clark, he starts to see one too. And then Jeff Haynes goes out and sees one too, and I'm thinking, this is insane that this naval captain who's retired – gave us these binoculars and told us where to look. And that was 2008. Now, of course, I'm not going to find out about the naval videos from 2004 until much later, like when everyone else did in 2017. So, I mean, it's a funny coincidence. And is it a coincidence? Do the Navy guys know a lot more than they're saying? Who knows? But ever since then, I mean, I called home. I was calling people in my family. Like, I think we're being invaded. So, anyway, who knows what that was? But
that's pretty wild. Like he knew clearly he was sort of down with the down
out there
with the phenomenon, so to speak, because you know the whole infrared binoculars thing, that's a UFO thing nowadays.
Well, he wasn't using infrared. Those were the
night vision.
These were Gen 4, and he's out there by the McDonald Observatory, so we're talking about really clear skies. It could have just been coincidence, but now that I've learned about the naval's connection to this stuff, it is an awfully coincidental thing for him to have showed us where to look. So it's just a funny anecdote.
Now, Steve, didn't you say you were with Naval Intelligence for a while?
I was.
All right. Has that come up at all? Like, because you know how people in UFO world are like, you know, they don't trust any. Well, nowadays it depends on what you say, I guess. They'll trust you if you say what they want you to say. But has that come up at all, or aside from me asking you about it? When you were in Naval Intelligence, I take it you had nothing to do with, you know, anything anomalous, so to speak. If you could tell us, I'm sure it would have come up. But you weren't involved in any UFO projects with Naval Intelligence.
No, I wasn't, not at all. So mostly I worked in security, but it's interesting because a lot of people are like, oh, you worked in the intelligence community, and everybody thinks like you're involved in this super secret, you know, government spying and all this stuff. But no, I wasn't involved in anything like that, and you know, it hasn't been an issue yet. But there's a lot of people out in the community that are very leery of people that have worked in the intelligence community.
Right, exactly. That's why. As soon as he mentioned that, I was like, "Oh no, this guy's probably he's probably heard it from people who were like, shut up, G-Man. I know what you're up to. I know what you're up to, G-Man. So I ain't putting that box in my backyard. But we want you to put the box in your backyard, folks. It's pretty cool. Now, what about if it rains? I live in Massachusetts. What if it snows? Do I need to like bring it in?
So it's. Yeah, the cameras are weatherproof, right? So if you want to keep it outside year-round, you really need to have, like, a weatherproof box. So you can get a weatherproof box for about $100. Most all the cameras are weatherproof. The only thing with the snow that you need to keep in mind is you got to wipe the snow off the lens.
Yeah.
So it keeps recording. And that's really it. I mean, you want your camera in an accessible place that you can go give it a quick cleaning or wipe it off or – access if you need to check on something.
Yeah. All right, and then underneath in that box part is like all the technical computery stuff.
Yeah, all the computers, the sensors and all the power and the internet is all in that box. So you just run a power cable and internet cable to it and you're good to go.
Yeah, I definitely think you guys should sell them on the website cuz That's a really nice looking. That's really. I would have people. No, I don't want to be mean. I was gonna say like, because if I'm thinking about like if I made one, it would be like all dilapidated and like on a cardboard box and like just bad. But that maybe that would be cool. You guys should have a thing that showcases some of the ones that people have made. People should, people who make their own should share their own directions on how they made them too. I think that would be interesting.
We have, yeah, we have I think three different versions that you can find on the hardware section of the website somewhere.
Yeah.
The one that you're seeing, that the white plastic boxing, that's Richard Knopp's design. He's in Austria.
Yeah.
He's got
his
thing out there, and it's been in Austria out in the weather for quite a while. I haven't had any issues with any of the enclosures I've used, and I'm in, you know, balmy Houston, Texas. I haven't had any issues whatsoever with humidity. And then there's a couple other guys who've done some designs. Those just were in the drawing stage, and you can see those somewhere on the website too. So, like I said, if you have any listeners who are who like to build stuff, you know, we got plenty of work to do.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure people love to build shit. Now's the time to do it if you're stuck at home anyway. So it would be cool to see what kind of stuff people can come up with. Now, when the Navy guy gave you the binoculars and everything, clearly he wanted you to look where he thought there would be a UFO, or knew there would be a UFO, or what he thought you would think was a UFO. Did he sort of like, how did that moment end? Were you like, guy, I forget what you said his name was, but Bob, what the hell was that all about? Or like, whoa, what was that, Bob?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that? Like, I'm sure something came up in the conversation.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What was that exchange like?
We were all pretty freaked out. we're all, you know, adult, you know, professional men out there looking at this stuff. So obviously we think he knows what that was.
Right.
You know, he just played stupid. He played dumb. And he denied knowing anything about it. And it only happened for 10 minutes. So it was just enough time for the three of us to see it. There were probably five other people there waiting their turn. So by the time it got to the fourth person, whatever was up there quit happening.
Right.
So that was, it was just a 10-minute time. Yeah, and it is awfully strange that he knew where to point us to look. So it may be something that he's seen there a lot. And I'm obviously going to ask him to put a tracker out there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what about you, Steve? Have you, I'm guessing probably not because you only got into this like a year ago, but have you ever had any UFO sighting or even anything that anomalous, you know, in your life?
Actually, yes. So I've always had somewhat of an interest in the topic. So I'd catch the occasional documentary, you know, watch the UFO show. But I never really actually got involved in the community until this last year. But it's something I've been loosely interested in for years. So back in 1996, I actually saw something. I still don't know what it is till this day. I have no explanation for it. So I was outside in Idaho, sleeping outside in the middle of the night, and a bright orange and yellow ball came across the sky, floating across the sky. And I was with two other people, and we watched it float across the sky for about 10 seconds, and then it just stopped and sat there just perfectly still for like 5-10 seconds, then shot off the direction it came from. And it cleared the entire sky and horizon in like less than a second, and it was just gone. And I've never seen anything like that since. So ever since I've seen that, I've always had somewhat of an interest in UFOs, but I never actually got into researching or studying UFOs till this last year.
Yeah. Well, we should mention some of the other guys on the team here because you know, I like doing that kind of thing. Tell me about Corey Gaspard. He's the co-founder, lead web developer, and DevOps, which I take is I don't know. I don't know what the hell DevOps is. I assume it's something with the software type stuff. But tell me, what his role is with the group. It sounds like if he's the co-founder, it sounds like he jumped you and him kind of you and him and Adam here got it all rolling at the same time or something.
Yeah, so essentially, when Corey came along, I was just slinging all the code myself and just doing everything. And he came along and took over all the cloud stuff, took over all of our deployment and user interface development. So it was actually a huge help to have him on board because he's a professional cloud architect. And he really kind of got our cloud infrastructure and development operations up to kind of like an enterprise level that you would expect, you know, at a professional company. So he really brought a lot of skills and expertise to the team that we didn't have before. So he's really taken over a lot of the development for the user interface and kind of the deployment of the tracker system out to all the trackers. So he's really added a lot to the team, and it's great to have him on board. We need more people like Corey to jump onto the team and take over some of the development efforts.
Yeah. Well, it's a big undertaking. And what about Richard Hopf? He's the hardware design fabrication. I thought you said a different name for the person who made the box, but I might have misheard you. But tell me about Richard Hopf. What's his role with the company?
So Richard actually kind of popped up out of nowhere. He's actually been with the project pretty early on, but he just came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he one day says, hey, check out these designs, and he designed that beautiful box that you see on the website. He's a professional and actually develops products and enclosures for a company in Austria, and he just popped up one day with these 3D-printed models and hardware designs and renderings of that nice white box, and that box became our de facto standard SkyHub enclosure. And he's a very active part of the team for planning out all the power and hardware layout and enclosure layout. So he's been a great asset to the team as far as the physical deployment of the tracker.
All right, and last but not least, what about my buddy Chris Cogswell? As I said, he's the chair of the Science Advisory Board. So what's his role? What does that entail?
So we kind of hit a point in SkyHub where we acknowledged that we needed a person to help navigate other researchers in the academic community. So we also wanted someone that had a PhD and that had a very strong background in science to make sure what we're doing with SkyHub is aligning to the scientific method and that we're actually producing data that people want to use. So we got Chris Cogswell and to take over the role of our chair of the Science Advisory Board and kind of be that outreach person and that person that drives the scientific aspect of SkyHub. And he's currently building up an advisory board with other professionals, and he's put together, you know, great conversations and meetings. We had a great conversation with the chef, Seth Shostak from SETI, and he's built other connections with other individuals from universities and researchers, and he's brought in meteorologists. So it's been really fantastic. He's done a great job with outreach for SkyHub.
Tell me about the meeting with Seth Shostak, because he's very, people in UFO world don't like him because he's anti-UFO, or he's anti-alien, let's be honest. He's skeptical about the alien thing, but I would assume he would be down with what you guys are doing, because it's, like I said before, it's very similar to a SETI-like project. It is kind of, I guess you could technically call it a SETI. I mean, SETI's not like it's like Kleenex or something, you know what I mean, where it's like SETI is, or it's actually the opposite. But you know, SETI is just the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. It's not just what Seth Shostak's SETI Institute did. It's like any search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I go outside. If I put a SkyHub in my backyard, I'd be doing SETI. So what did he say about what you guys are doing?
So, I mean, obviously he's skeptical.
Yeah, that was just an informal chat, really.
Right. I know. Like I said, I didn't want you guys to betray any sort of trust or anything, but was he like, hey, that's a good idea, go for it, or like, here's, I don't know, I don't like it, or whatever. Or like, I'm skeptical. That's probably more likely.
I mean, I'll just talk generally. Any scientist, for the most part, is going to be skeptical of searching for aliens here or UFOs. They're very skeptical
right.
of that. And he's, of course, Seth Shostak, he's going to be skeptical about this. He probably doesn't think we're going to catch UFOs. But the argument I will always make, if we actually get real credible evidence and take it to scientists like Seth Shostak or Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's another popular one, or even bring
right.
it to skeptics like Michael Shermer, and you actually present them with hard, real evidence, they're going to take that serious because at the end of the day, they're scientists and they look at evidence. And when
yeah.
you give them compelling evidence, then they pursue that. So
I guess what would you consider to be compelling evidence from the sky? Like, what, I guess, what would you say, you know, something behaving in a manner which is beyond what we think is capable of human flight? That's sort of that's a generalization. But, like, what would make you sit up and go, oh, shit, we got one? Kinda, what would be your wow signal, if you will?
I'm not really sure. I mean,
you
obviously,
seen it yet,
a very,
right?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that answer is going to be. And the best we can do is collect as much data as we can, and
yeah,
and let scientists and researchers look through it and study it and analyze it and see if we actually find legitimate UFOs.
Okay, now this actually works perfectly as we sort of head toward the end of the show. Now, okay, so let's say I get the box, right? Take me through. This is like, I feel bad. I feel like I'm like talking to the fucking cable company, but this is, you're going to have to do this, dude, if this is what you guys are doing. So I get the box, right? I get my neighbor, Freddie, who's an electrician, to make the box. So what do I do now? Take me through this is the listeners too, obviously. So what, because I'm on the website and I have no idea, like there's no link or anything. It's like hook your box up to the network. So take me through the steps that someone's going to have to do to be a part of the network.
Hey,
I can
hook you up. Go up to the top of the website where it says resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then pull that down and click on Wiki. And the very first thing you see will say getting started.
Yep. Ah, okay. There you go. All right. See, I apologize. It is okay. So yeah.
Okay.
All right, we don't have to go through all that.
So,
all right. So that's how. Okay. Good. Well, I could.
So basically,
I couldn't find it. All right.
Well, we're definitely going to have like a quick start manual that just has a couple steps to get people started. But really, all you have to do is once you get the box set up, we have a URL you type in. And it'll set up your whole tracker, install all the software, and connect itself to the network automatically. So there's really only one command you have to run once you get the box booted up. And then you'll be rolling. You'll get presented with a little web interface that you go through and fill out a few fields and hit go, and your box will join the network and start sending data.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm on here now, folks. It's actually pretty. Yeah. What is SkyHub? How do I set up a SkyHub? How do you build it? Deploying SkyHub outdoor enclosure. So, okay. Yeah. So a lot of the logistical questions, some of which I pestered you guys with tonight, are available on the wiki. For people
yeah,
who want to join
Justin
in on the phone.
Yeah, we got Justin Phillips, who put a lot of work into that, and another guy named James Price. Justin Phillips and James Price. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, because that's important. Because, like I said, I mean, it's. I felt a little overwhelmed or whatever. Like, like I was daunted. I'm like I said, it's like, all right, well, I'd like to do this, but how will I be a part of SkyHub? So that's how you do it. You go to the skyhub.org and you scroll down to Wiki, and that'll bring you to the directions on how to be a part of this. So, I'm interested. I'm definitely interested. If somebody goes and makes them, I'll buy one. I don't know. I'll look into trying to do it myself, but as I said, I'm really not mechanically inclined like that. So that's why I think it would be cool to have one I could just order and open up and take out of the box. Now, what about an app? Has you guys looped this into an app? Seems like everybody's doing apps and shit now. So, I guess you could probably kind of just run the thing into a thing on your phone, right?
So right now we do have a web interface that you can use on your web browser from your computer or from your phone. We do plan on making an actual native mobile app for Apple and Android, so you can actually check out your tracker and your videos from anywhere. So that'll be
right.
Something that we'll probably get done over the next the end of the year, maybe next year. We've got a lot of work to do, so might take a little time to get a mobile app out there. But if you're an app developer, come join SkyHub and you can start working on it now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I like what you guys are doing, and I don't get the impression that this is some kind of like get rich quick scheme or anything or anything like that. They seem to be coming. Yeah. It seems to be coming because it's like anyone, if you want to be a part of it, it's going to cost money, but that's how else are you going to get the fucking box, folks? Like, that's not like we can't just have, you can't just make one out of thin air. It's not like that. It's not like MUFON where you pay $50 and get a card. So it makes perfect sense in that regard. I think like I said, an easy access to these things would be really huge. So it would be cool if you – I don't even know. Everyone's going out of business nowadays. I don't even know who'd make that. Craftsman or something, or Sky and Telescope or one of those places like that. But who knows? It would be cool. So what else – how can people – aside from – take us one more time, like how people can help out, how can people be a part of this. Skyhub.org is the website. You got recurring donation, one-time donation. Recurring, I assume, is the Patreon. Yeah, and the chat is like just an ongoing chat room.
That's
yeah.
Right. There's 15 different topic sections, so you can see right away when you get into the chat room. If you want to go discuss fabrication, you can go there. If you want to go into analysis, you can go there. Ideas we have, so you can go there. So you can find out, whatever you best fit for, you can go right to that topic and start talking about it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's like, looks like Slack kind of. I don't know what system you guys are using.
Yeah,
it might be Discord.
Yeah, it's definitely
I'm old.
Like
I don't,
Slack.
I've never been on Discord, so, but it might be something like that. All right. Well, what's next for you guys? Like what can people expect? You're going to roll out you're kind of hoping that the wheels start turning now and people start deploying these boxes, right? You're going to roll out a new version of the software, and then like I said, I don't want to be a dick to your community, but folks, if you're in the community, you got to be — the whole thing is dependent on people participating in the process of making a box, getting a box and putting it out there. So I guess that's sort of what you need, sort of this momentum to go on, right?
Yeah. We need people to come join the community. We need people to deploy trackers. We need developers. And, hey, if you just want to – if you want to donate to our Patreon to pay for the cloud storage and the cloud infrastructure, just jump in, be a part of it, contribute in any way you can, and let's make this thing happen.
Well, it sounds like a very promising project. I wish you guys the best of luck. I think I hit you with a million questions. Is there anything else I forgot to ask in this conversation? I feel like we pretty much covered almost everything.
Yeah. I think we've got the YouTube link on the website. We've got the Patreon link on the website. We've got the instructions there. We've got the chat that's pretty well set up. You can follow us on Twitter. At SkyHub10 is the Twitter handle.
Yep.
We have a subreddit on Reddit, and that's SkyHub is the name of that sub. Anything else, Steve?
I think that pretty much covers it. But yeah, if you want to get involved or if you just want to build a box, best place to hit us up is at chat.skyhub.org, and we're all available in there pretty much all day. And
if you have any questions,
you can
email us. Email us at team@skyhub.org if you have some.
Somebody did ask a question in the chat, actually, that is an interesting one. I hate to slip on a banana peel after we did the close-up. But what about has anyone? What about sort of privacy concerns? I mean, we're talking the UFO community is very paranoid. No offense to the UFO folks, and so is there. Have you seen any sort of pushback where people are like, well, I don't want my address being, I don't want people knowing where I live. You know, is there any sort of concern about that? Because if you have a box and you're part of the community, then people would have to know where your box is, right?
Yeah, so when we release the public data, when it comes to the GPS readings, we'll have to reduce the precision of the GPS, basically. So we don't want to broadcast where all the boxes are, especially we don't want people to go look at a map and be like, okay, this is where all the boxes are. Let's go steal them all. So
we'll have to reduce the precision.
Yeah, we'll have to reduce the precision in the data that we make available publicly. And, you know, just to protect people's houses and property.
Yeah. That didn't even dawn on me until somebody asked, but yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Beyond that, we don't include anybody's personal information in the data set. We don't include names or any of that information. So really, there's no focus on collecting information about people. It's all about the tracker. And we are mindful that, you know, people's addresses will be in the GPS coordinates. So we will solve that problem. That's not an issue.
Excellent. All right. So with all that, like I said, I didn't mean to bring that down on the last question there, but somebody just slipped it into me, and I was like, "That I didn't even think of that." So it's like, let's try and cover everything. All right, so the website is skyhub.org. I highly recommend folks check out the YouTube as well. It's Skyhub. Just punch that in. You'll see that'll really – and we'll have a link up to it on the Banal of America site in the write-up for the show. That really kind of encapsulates you know, what exactly this thing is going to be producing. I'd even suggest maybe putting it somewhere right on that homepage, one of these videos, because that really kind of shows people what they'll be seeing with Skyhub once this thing kind of gets up and running. And I wish you guys the best of luck. Let me know if I can help you out in any way, and I'll be keeping an eye on things and trying to get one of these boxes. I want to be in on the network. So who knows? Maybe I'll finally pick up something interesting here at the compound. So, like I said, skyhub.org is the website. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Steve, for doing the show. Much appreciated, my friends.
Thanks for having us on.
Have a great night.
Night.
All right. Have a good night.
All right, folks. There you go. That was. Why do I do this? I don't have the notes in front of me. Come on, Banal. Get with it. It's the last names I have the problem. There you go. There you go, folks. That was Steve McDaniel and Adam Allen of Skyhub. Very interesting idea. We talked about something. I should have brought this up on the show, but we talked about something similar to this with Peter Davenport like a decade plus ago, talking about a passive radar system that he was suggesting spread out across America. So very kind of similar idea, but with new technology. And it's enticing. I'm interested. I'm definitely interested to see what these guys pick up with this thing. As I said, I watched that Discovery Channel show where they show the different cameras following the bank robbers. And it's like, oh, if we could follow the UFO like that, we'd find out where it goes. All right. So with that said, I intimate. I was a little grumpy at the start of the show tonight, folks, because last week we had Edward Dumont scheduled for the show. We were ready to go. I was talking to him 5 minutes before the show started, ready to go on the air. And Blog Talk just fucked me again. And I don't even feel bad saying this because I emailed them when this was happening. It wouldn't broadcast live nor record. Which is with the Justin Bamford episode, it recorded but didn't broadcast live. You know, I emailed them, and they just replied the same way they did with the Justin Bamford episode, where they're like, well, we got it fixed now. And I wrote them back and said, why am I paying you? It's expensive. This is expensive to do, to have the freedom to do the show the way we do it in prime time, live, and all that. So I said, like, why am I paying you this money every month? Now you've ruined two out of my last three shows. And, of course, they did not even write me back. So I got no response to that. I guess there is no way really to respond to that. We're a shitty company. So the long and the short of it is that we're going to roll on with Blog Talk like a rickety old airplane through the summer. When we wrap up the Summer of Strangeness, I'll take a few weeks off. And during that time, I'm going to look at finding a new service to broadcast live, because I need something reliable. I can't work with something that shits the bed two out of 3 weeks. So I hate people that talk, like, do this inside baseball talk on their show. But I kind of wanted to explain this to people who've been sitting around going, what the hell happened with Banal of America last week? Well, that's what happened. So Edward, I told him I had the SkyHub guys set up for tonight. I was working through the schedule for August, and so Edward's going to be on next week. And, yeah, we're going to talk about colonialism. We're going to talk about the Mekele Membe legend. We're going to talk about reptilians, essentially like how the British colonialism led to a lot of these legends of mysterious creatures in Africa. And we're going to talk about the Flat Earth, because he's a big Flat Earth fan. I, as you know, I'm a big Flat Earth fan. I'm not a Flat Earth believer, but I am a fan. I'm a friend of the Flat Earthers. And he's done a lot of fantastic research on areas of the Flat Earth that I have not explored as much. People think it's a very American phenomenon, very European phenomenon, parts of Australia. But he's looked at it in other communities, other cultures. It's surprisingly popular in the Middle East. It's huge in Brazil. There's a connection to Boko Haram. That's how you say it, I think, Boko Haram. Yeah, they're somehow connected to the Flat Earth. So he's looked into all that. We're going to get into, you know, the Flat Earth alone is on the fringe. We're going to get into the fringe of the fringe and learn about sort of the more obscure realms of Flat Earth. And that'll be next time on Banal of America. That's going to be, what, August 14th at 9 p.m. Cross your fingers, God willing. I'm going to be mortified if we go to get on the air next Friday and I have to postpone Edward again. He's a very nice guy. And so if that happens, I was just terrified tonight. I had two guests. What would happen if the show fell off the rails? Luckily, it didn't, and everything worked out fine. And Steve and Adam were great guests and a fascinating conversation, and they're working on some exciting stuff. So enough of my yakking. You've heard me ramble enough. Next week, Edward Guimont, I think it's Guimont. I asked him before the show, too, and he told me, and now I forgot. But so I'll have to get that again, but I'm pretty sure it's Edward Guimont. But be that as it may, nonetheless, regardless, putting that aside, next week, Dr. Edward Guimont, Banal of America, August 14th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 2 hours. I'll be coming off a vacation. I'll be on vacation next week, so I should be hopefully in a good mood. And I'm really looking forward to talking about Jesus, I'm tired now. I'm really looking forward to talking about the Flat Earth with him, because I do love that Flat Earth. So with all that said, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Until next time, this is Tim Banal saying have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Good night.